Welcome to Eat, Capture, Share, the podcast for food bloggers and food photographers who want to earn an income doing what they love. My name is Kimberly. I'm your host. Episode 130. Welcome back, everybody, to the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. My name is Kimberly Espinel. I'm a food photographer, food photography teacher. I'm the author of the Amazon bestselling book, Creative Food Photography, and a creative business mentor for food photographers, food bloggers, and food content creators just like you. And today I'm bringing you a super fun, I think, super interesting, a super uplifting conversation I had a few months ago with Terry Campbell all about AI. I know it is a topic that is concerning so many of us, and Terry just really breaks it down and makes it sound much less scary and also actually really fun and interesting. But before I tell you more about my chat with Terry and who Terry is and all the good stuff, I just wanted to let you know a couple of things that I have coming up that you may be interested in. So the very first one is I will be speaking at the Food Photography Summit in Paris this March. I want to say it's the 15th of March, but I will put a link to it in the show notes just because this is off the top of my head and I'm never to be trusted with dates. So please, 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 if you are in Paris or if you're planning on going to Paris around March time and you want to learn about food photography, and specifically my session is about food styling. I'll be doing a food styling demo and kind of digging a little bit deeper and doing a Q&A around food styling as well. And if you want to see that and then come and hang out with me and some of the other great speakers that are going to be there, please do head to the show notes and check that out. And then the second event that I have coming up is a two-day food reels and food styling session that I'm doing with Sylvia Bifaro. She and I have been running workshops together for years and years and years. And I feel that we have very different skill sets that really complement each other. So you're going to get a really rounded learning experience. But it is essentially about creating beautiful high-end reels and digging into the storytelling element of it. So Sylvia will be taking the lead on the kind of technical side, as it were, of the videography. And then I will be chipping in with my bits in terms of, you know, how to optimize your content for Instagram, how to style it in a way that's appealing, food styling, all the good stuff. And just, yeah, it's always magical, these in-person events, to kind of hang out and get inspired and just spend time together in a way that you can't online or through a screen. So if that is something that your heart desires, your creativity needs, check that out. Again, I want to say it is a Friday and Saturday, so I think it's something like the 21st and 22nd of March. Again, all the details will be in the show notes, or just drop me a DM. I'm always happy to send through more information. Right, I think that is it in terms of what's happening, what's coming up. And now a little bit more about today's podcast episode. So I sometimes in the newsletter or on Instagram stories, I will ask, you know, what are the topics you're concerned about? What are the things that are on your mind that you're grappling with that we can offer in the podcast as a topic? And AI was one of the ones that just kept coming up. And I know so many of you are concerned about AI kind of taking over and leaving us photographers by the wayside, as so much can be done in-house by companies and brands now themselves through AI. So I really wanted to speak to somebody who is at the forefront of AI and photography, who's the expert, the person to turn to, who's using AI to really up-level his game and actually obtain more and better work. So I asked around and the name Terry Campbell came up numerous times. So I thought, he's the man to speak to and have on the podcast. And it was just such a joy to speak to him and to gain more clarity around AI and how it pertains to food photography. And especially for somebody like me, who's much more intuitive rather than a technical photographer, it was very helpful and also inspiring to speak to Terry about AI and what it all means. So I walked away from this conversation feeling uplifted, inspired, and, you know, just curious more than anything. And I hope you will feel the exact same way. So without further ado, here is Terry Campbell. Terry, thank you so much for agreeing to be on the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. I'm super excited about today's chat, but before we kind of get started, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Terry Campbell. I'm a commercial food and beverage photographer and director based in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's me.
Can you share a little bit about how you got started on your photography, food photography journey?
Well, when I got started, the word foodie didn't exist. Much different time, maybe hard to imagine that once upon a time, photographers didn't like to shoot food. In fact, you know, in Cincinnati, there were maybe 40 photographers, commercial photographers, and only, you know, a few of them, less than five, shot food. Mm-hmm. And so it was something that was just very difficult at the time. The style required perfection, and mm-hmm. that takes a while with food. It's difficult to do. So a lot of people didn't do it. And I found through work I did for Procter & Gamble, they had a lot of food brands at the time, and I ended up mm-hmm. working on some of them and found that I really liked it and I had a knack for it. So mm-hmm. it just made sense to kind of move in that direction. And I thought, even if I'm the worst one, I'm one of five instead of one of 40. So, you know, I started moving into that, and it took a while. You know, when I first started, I still shot a lot of other things, you know, products and packages and diapers and whatever. But eventually I started getting more and more food assignments. And eventually it felt like the scales tipped maybe 10 years in, you know, that I was known as the food photographer, and mm-hmm. people forgot I could do anything else, but that was fine. I got some great food assignments.
And may I ask, I don't want to age you, but what are we talking about? Like, when did it all kick off, so to say?
My business started in 1988. So I was shooting for 5 years before that, before I really went full-fledged into the business. But yeah, so I've been at it quite a while. It's what's so invigorating about this time right now with the AI is just mm-hmm. how it's opened things up again and really got me so excited about the future.
Well, we'll definitely dig deeper into that. But I would love to know, just because, you know, you have such a wide perspective of what, you know, food photography is and how it has evolved. And I'd love your insight and your take on, you know, you talk about precision, you know, at the very start, and, you know, things have obviously changed from the 80s in terms of what we consider aesthetically pleasing and food sun and all those things. But I'd love to kind of get a sense from you and, you know, what that shift was like, what it felt like, and also where you see food photography moving towards.
Yeah, like I said, you know, early in my career, things were very perfect precision. A lot of the shots that you see today, we would have thought, oh my God, that's awful, you know, and we always did a stand-in. We always created a mock-up first, you know, of just something we could put on set. And I think that's where I really saw the transition was, because we'd always do a mock-up. No one would ever think about actually capturing film on that, because it was just a mock-up to get your lights right. And then you mm-hmm. took 2 hours and built the real thing, you know? So we never thought about shooting the mock-up. And then one day we like threw the mock-up away and put the real hero out there. And the art director was like, there's something I liked about the first one, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, what's in the trash now? So, you know, that was like a challenge of like, okay, you know, styles are softening. Mm-hmm. People are liking a more spontaneous look. You know, today I never do a stand-in. Yeah. In fact, if I put something on the set and it's not working, I just throw it away and start again, because, you know, the spontaneity is what's important now, being able to just capture it immediately. So it's kind of flipped that from being hours to get something on set to putting something on set right away. And if it doesn't work, take it off, do something else.
Yes. And even then, was working with food stylist a given? Was that part of the experience, so to say?
Yeah, in my world, it certainly was. In the world mm-hmm. of commercial photography, you know, I'm doing a lot of menus, a lot of packaging work. Yeah. So yes, it was a given that you worked with a food stylist, and, you know, different food stylists have different skills, different talents, different strengths. You know, as you know, there's no real school for food styling. So some were artists, some were photographers, some were sculptors, some were home economists, some were, you know, just chefs. So you have different talents out of that and different strengths too, to bring to different projects. But we always worked with a food stylist, always had a big team. And, you know, we would typically capture, and we're talking 8x10 transparency film back then too. And we would typically capture like two or three shots a day. You know, that was about the most you could do. I'm thinking about Wendy's specifically. We shot Wendy's for like 14 years. So for the burgers that were going to go on the menus, we'd get like two of those a day, two or three.
Yeah, it's amazing just how much, as you say, precision and time goes into that. It's incredible. It's amazing. Now, what's really interesting is that from what you're sharing with me is that you've always been drawn to maybe not the technical side, but the kind of very precise and really thought out, meticulous
kind of style of food photography. And, you know, perhaps now also knowing a little bit more about your background, it's not surprising that you found your way to AI and have become, you know, a master at it in many ways. And I'd love for you to first, maybe for somebody like myself, actually, who hasn't dabbled yet in AI as it pertains to food photography, if you can explain what it is, how to use it, any kind of things around that. And then the subsequent question would be is like, what makes it so amazing?
Well, your previous comment sparked something too. I think in the beginning of my career, I thought of photography as more of a science than an art. I felt that it was understanding how to operate the camera to get a good exposure, you know, to use the flash, those kind of things. So it's very technical. And over my career, I've morphed my thinking to being more of an artist, you know, and feeling like more of an artist. And it's in what I bring to that set, not just my technical expertise. And that's, you know, followed right along with the technology. You know, 40 years ago, you know, you needed to understand how to get a good exposure. You needed to understand how to operate the flash. But really, I think today you need to have that creative vision. You need to have that eye. So
yeah,
it's interesting just that kind of triggered that thought for me.
Yes.
So,
and can I just say something to that? Because of course, I am definitely old enough to remember that, you know, you'd have your, you know, film and then you needed to be sure that the exposure was right, because it's not like now in digital where you can just change it. Like, you needed to know, because if it wasn't right, you'd only find out after the fact, after the set was gone. So it makes sense that technicality was even more important than it is now at that point in time. Am I making sense?
Yeah, that was always the worst part for me, a Friday night when the stylist got on a plane back to New York and I'm still waiting for the film. And I'm like, oh, I hope that worked. I hope that worked. Yeah, so it's been a fun ride for sure. But your question was how AI is changing the game and how we use it. Is that what it was?
Yeah, so firstly, like, what exactly is AI in the context of food photography or photography in general? Like, what does it do? What do we need to know about it? Where to start, kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that AI is another tool. You know, it's just, to me, it's the same as Photoshop. I feel like I've seen this movie before. You know, it's like we live this transition with digital. We live this transition with Photoshop and, you know, all the changes it brought to the industry. And AI really is just, to me, another tool, another way we envision our photographs. Although I do believe that one day I'll create just as many pictures on a computer as I do with my camera. It's just evolving so quick. But AI basically is, you know, software that is taking a text prompt. Usually you can do different ways here, but typically a text prompt describing something, and then it's creating an image from that. And it's just unbelievable what you can do with just your words and, you know, description. And then you can, of course, modify it further. You can add images. You can have image to image generation, text to image. You know, you can combine images. You can do a lot of things with it. So, but the basic prompt is just text to an image. And then,
so can I just ask, so for example, let's just say I shoot, this is something I'm planning. So let's just say I want to shoot a Christmas table, and the background that I have, because this is what you can do in Photoshop right now, right? Like, the background I have isn't suitable. So I could then, through Photoshop, insert a different backdrop, for argument's sake. How is what I could do with AI different in that scenario in terms of changing the backdrop? Is it just that it's less labor intensive in terms of getting the coloring right or whatever, or is it just a process that is different, as in I need to write it rather than import photos? Like, can you help me understand how it works, as it were?
I had one particular project that we did some of the work before I started using AI, and we did some of the work after I was using AI. Okay. So before AI, we needed a kitchen background for our model. Yeah. She was working at a stovetop. We need a kitchen background. We searched stock sites. We had to find stuff that we could license or that was, you know, royalty-free stock. And we found some kitchens that worked, and we did the photographs that way, and that was fine. It was challenging that we couldn't get all of the exact kind of kitchens we wanted, you know, maybe socioeconomically or color or time of day. You know, we couldn't control a lot of that stuff. Mm. So we just had to find ourselves in the mercy of whatever stock was available. Yes. But after AI, and I had been working with it for a while, the client came back to do the same project with some modifications for the next season. And it was like, hey, can we create these backgrounds with AI? Can we use them to describe the perfect kitchen that we want, the perfect colors, the time of day, and get that image and then use that image behind our stylist, so, or behind our model. So what it does is it just gives you so many more options creatively, stylistically. You can just change, adjust to what you need. It's also pretty darn fast. I mean, if you've ever searched for stock images, you know how long that can take. So it's quicker, it's more customizable, and it's just, to me, more interesting and can elevate things much more quickly.
Okay, that is super helpful. That is super clear. Thank you so much. I'd also love to understand. So that's one scenario where you have, say, the dish and you want the background change. Another, from what you're describing, is essentially from nothing, make something, as in you don't even have to pick up your camera. And that would just be that you would say to AI, I'd love to generate a photo of a Christmas dinner with turkey, stuffings, whatever, and create that for me as a photo. Am I understanding that?
Yeah, that's right. And I will say that this doesn't always work the way we want. In fact, I was just last week, I was trying the turkey thing and it doesn't what a turkey looks like. There are a lot of things that AI still doesn't quite understand that you really have to coax it a lot. And even then, it's still very difficult to get some of the sizes and shapes of things you want. I find myself breaking things apart. Like if I want a pumpkin pie and a turkey on a table, I might generate the table, I might generate the turkey, I might generate the pie separately and then combine them in post or in Photoshop. Okay. Because it's really hard to get all those things at once. You know, I did do a pumpkin pie that was amazing and incredible, but that's what I think with AI right now, you really have to be open to the idea of, I may not get exactly what I want, but I may get something else that's really cool. But if you're very specific and you have to have very certain things, then no, you know, you're not always going to be able to do it with AI.
Gotcha. So right now, how are you finding AI is helping you in the creative process? Like, what are you finding that you're using it most for? Because it doesn't sound like it's replacing your photography work overall. Like it sounds more like it's enhancing and speeding up the process. So I'd love to get an understanding of how you found it most useful.
So definitely for backgrounds, you know, what you're talking about there, I like to use the example. I have it on my website. I think I have it on the website. I know I post it on social media, but I have a Duncan Hines cake mix box. And if you worked on the social media team for Duncan Hines and you needed to make a post on Thursday at 3 o'clock, and, you know, would you ever like build a whole set, prop style it, you know, bring in a stove, light it, and put the box in the middle of the counter? Probably not. That's just too much cost for just a social media post. But if you create the kitchen and the counter in AI, and then you photograph the actual box, because AI is not going to reproduce it. But if you photograph the actual box on a gray background and then outline it and put it into your AI image, knowing what you know about the lighting that you can match and the shadows and such, then you can have a social media post that's more than acceptable for Thursday at 3 o'clock, you know, and it costs you. I mean, you just couldn't have made the numbers work economically.
Yeah.
But in addition to things like that, you know, I use it a lot for backgrounds. I use it a lot for just ideation when I'm trying to think of what am I going to do this week? You know, speaking of cakes, I was shooting cakes for a competitor, Duncan Hines. And we were trying to imagine, like, how do we want to photograph these cakes? It's just a slice. You know, what can we do? And so, you know, I turned to AI to generate some different cake images, just like I would usually go to the web and try to search for images and find inspiration. And the AI gave me back things that I didn't expect, but I was like, you know, I could bring the light from that direction. That would be kind of cool. And now I can kind of see where that would go. So this is the thing that it does. It really opens up your mind to, like, what else can I do with this? Where else could I go? And the other thing that I use the AI for a lot is that, you know, like I said, I do a lot of packaging work. So, you know, you've got this beautiful package for Kellogg's or something in the store, and you're like, wow, I really want everybody to know I worked on this. So I buy the package, I take it back, and I shoot it on white because, you know, it's just a box. I don't want to confuse it too much. Or maybe I put it in a kitchen, or do I build a set and actually light around it? You know, put a bowl in front. Like, it's just so hard to try to figure out how to highlight this work you're doing and make it stand out. And what I've found is that I can create a kitchen with AI, and more so, I can create it with watercolor, so that when I place the box in front of that kitchen set that's painted in watercolor, the box really stands out, but you have the benefit of the set behind it. But because it's watercolor, it's not really competing, but it's there. So, you know, it's given me ways to highlight work that I've done, you know, different pieces like that. And then, of course, just even expanding backgrounds. You know, with generative Photoshop now, you can expand a background. So if you shot it horizontally and your client's like, we really want to run this as a reel, well, now I can generate, you know, more background top and bottom.
Yeah.
You know, by just using the AI that's within Photoshop to generate those backgrounds for me.
I love it, because really what you're describing here is that it's a different way to get creative, that it's opened up new opportunities in terms of how, you know, ideas that it sparks and ways to work. And what you're also describing is that the clients that you've worked with have been really open to AI, because it means that, you know, you can adhere to a smaller budget, so to say. Am I getting that right? Being a full-time food photographer and creative business owner is stressful. There's no question about it. From liaising with clients to creating content for Instagram to answering emails, it's a lot. What's helped me stay grounded, focused, positive, and energetic has been my commitment to a solid morning routine. At the center of that routine is good hydration and a fair dose of antioxidants to see me through the day, both of which are provided by Magic Mind. Magic Mind is the world's first productivity drink made of ceremonial grade matcha, lion's mane, turmeric, and ashwagandha. In short, everything you need to show up your best at client shoots or long days of food content creation. Unlike coffee, it doesn't give you the jitters, yet still keeps me feeling focused and alert. Plus, Magic Mind tastes absolutely delicious and is insanely healthy too. If you're a listener in the US, you can find Magic Mind at Sprouts Market. Alternatively, you can order Magic Mind online and receive your delivery straight to your door. Simply use code ECS20 to receive 20% off your one-time purchase or your subscription, the latter of which offers you further savings. You can find the link to all things Magic Mind in the show notes. Again, remember to use code ECS20 to get 20% off. I've loved drinking Magic Mind, and I know you will too. Hey you, are you struggling to create engaging short form video content but feel overwhelmed and don't know where to start or how to improve the reels you're already filming? Then listen up. After months of talking about it, I am so excited to announce that our Reels course for food photographers and food content creators is ready to launch. Well, almost. If you'd like to be able to create short form video content, including engaging recipe reels or educational how-to clips, then our Reels online course for food photographers and food content creators may be for you. After having numerous content pieces go viral in 2023, I decided to pack all that I learned into a comprehensive online course where I outline exactly how to script great short form videos, how to produce that all-important hook, how to film like a pro, even if you just use your phone for content creation, and how to edit your reels to perfection. Doors to our Food Reels online course are now officially open, and to celebrate, we are offering podcast listeners 10% off. Please use code REELS10 at checkout to claim your discount. As the Food Reels course is still in beta mode, we've thrown in a couple of founders members extras. To find out more, head to the show notes and follow the link. This specific offer ends Sunday, February 4th at midnight GMT, so be sure to be quick. And if you're listening to this after the fact, follow the link still to discover if the course may be the right fit for you.
Yeah, I think budget plays into it. I think just, you know, art directors and creative directors that I work with are excited about pushing things as much as I am. So, you know, the fact that we can take something, and usually we're not just trying to say, well, if we do this with AI, we can do it cheaper. We're usually trying to say, you know, here's the budgets we've always had. How much further can we push it now?
Yes.
What else can we do for the same money? So they're not always trying to use it to cut costs, but they're definitely using it to elevate projects, you know, at maybe the same cost.
I love it. Now, when AI first came out, and I think that's actually still the case, a lot of photographers, a lot of writers, a lot of people have been very put off. And I suppose fearful of what AI could mean and whether it could replace photographers. And I'd love to get your thoughts on that.
I think if you told me 20 years ago that 20 years from now, everyone will have a camera in their pocket that is as good as yours, and they'll be able to take photos without knowing how to adjust the lens or set the depth of field, you know, and what they can't get right in the camera, they'll be able to fix in Photoshop, I would have thought, I need to find a different line of work, because clearly I'm going to be out of business in 20 years. You know, I can't, how can I survive that? Yet I survived that. And I do more work today than I did 20 years ago. I make more money today than I did 20 years ago. So that's what I mean about seeing a movie before. I'm like, I know where this goes. It's not, it's not this fearful thing. Of course we need to know it. I mean, when Photoshop came out, because you've said, I'm not going to learn that. I'm only going to shoot real photographs. I'm not going to manipulate them in any way. You could do that, but you probably wouldn't be working as a commercial photographer. You know, that's, it depends on what you want to do. If you want to be more of an artist and go that route, there's definitely opportunities. There are still people shooting film and happy to do it, you know, but it's also true that if you hadn't learned Photoshop and moved on with things, then you would be left behind.
Gotcha. So really what you're saying is that from where you're standing, there's still going to be work and possibly even more work, but knowing and understanding AI is going to be instrumental to continuing to find work, so to say.
I believe so. And even if you don't want to use AI, I think it's important that you understand how to use it to make your arguments against it. I mean, when the transition happened from film to digital, I didn't want to go. I wanted to stay with my 8x10 transparency film. You know, to me, there was nothing better. I even thought about buying an E6 processing machine so I could keep shooting film after, you know, they stopped making it, you know, but it's like, I finally like went kicking and screaming into the digital age, and now I wouldn't go back for anything. So I think it's just understanding of what's going on. So if you want to argue against it, that's fine. Know what the arguments are, because there certainly are valid reasons not to use AI. There's still, you know, the jury is still out on some of these things. As of now, we still can't own the copyright to anything we create solely with AI.
Okay.
So there's still challenges for sure.
And what does that mean in reality? So say, for example, you're doing it, let's just say Wendy's, because we name drop the Wendy's. So let's stick with Wendy's, right? So let's just say you've done this kind of shoot for Wendy's and you decide to change the backdrop using AI in theory. In practice, it means that they wouldn't be able to use that on a billboard. Am I right?
They wouldn't be able to copyright that portion of the image. They would still be able to copyright the portion of the image that was captured traditionally with a camera, yes. But the background may not be copyrightable now. So depending on how iconic it is or whatever, it might have an effect. But if it were just to create a kitchen behind it, you know, who cares?
So they could still use it on a billboard.
They could still use it, absolutely. Copyright doesn't keep you from using it. It just keeps others from taking it and using it themselves. You know, you could sue them and say, we own that. But yeah. And so in my world, you know, a lot of my clients will actually buy, you know, stock photography for different things, even for packaging. Yeah. They'll buy stock photography. And my argument to them is that if you used AI, you know, you wouldn't be able to copyright that image. But then again, who else is going to, you know, like if you go to Getty and you find an image and all your competition knows you went to Getty, they can license the same image. Yeah. You're not going to pay the exclusivity because that costs too much. Yeah. But if you come to me and have me create an AI image for you and you get exclusivity from me, then you de facto own it because no one else, you know, is going to get it from me because I've sold all the rights to you. So I think there's still opportunity for clients to use it without a copyright. I don't think that's as much of a hindrance as it's made out to be.
Amazing. Is there anything else in regards to AI that we haven't touched on that you feel is really important?
Well, you know, you talked about it with food photography. And I think one of the things is I created a shot of some cinnamon rolls and it's got a bite taken out of it and it's got the icing dripping down. And I created it all in AI. There's no Photoshop to it at all or no, you know, it didn't start with an image, but I created that image and it was so cool when I got the image. You know, as photographers, I think we're not really elated or satisfied, or we don't have that moment until it comes up on the screen and, you know, on the back of our cameras or on our computers. You know, it's when we see it and we know it's locked and we're like, yes, I got it. You know, that's the shot. And so this image with AI that I created, I had that euphoria, that moment, you know, that was like, I did it. And when I shared it with another photographer friend, he was like, I would really miss, you know, that whole environment in the studio where, you know, you're working with a stylist and you get the moment just exactly right. I'm like, I had the exact same feeling that I have if I had done that with 12 people and, you know, 4 hours later. It's just, it's just amazing to me that an image is an image and we can still create and be energized by, you know, working through a computer.
I love that. Yeah, I can sense, you know, how passionate you are about it. And in fact, Terry, it's really interesting. I'm not sure we put this to you when we got in touch, but a couple of weeks ago, I asked the listeners if there was anybody they wanted to have on the podcast, any topics. And then I think two people or three people suggested you specifically about AI. So, you know, people can sense your enthusiasm and obviously also your expertise. So I'm so glad they made that suggestion and I got to hear, because for me, it feels a little scary, but hearing you talk about it so positively. And also what I love about the idea of jumping in now and at least having a play is that I can say I was there at the beginning, because it sounds like we're only just at the beginning of this.
You nailed it, because I think, first of all, even if you jump in right now, you're still an early adopter. You're still going to be, you know, thought of as one of the first to do this. But when I started doing this a year ago, I started up a Instagram channel just for my AI work. Mm-hmm. And I told my son, I'm like, I want people to know I'm doing this now, because people are going to pass me. They're going to be so much better. But I want them to be like, oh, Terry's been doing this forever. You know, so, and it's so fun. It's at this point in my career to be, you know, embarking on this journey that for me is really, you know, just re-energized everything. Because I felt for the last maybe 10 years that I've kind of plateaued, and I was looking for what's the next thing? Is it photography? Am I supposed to be doing something else now? Where am I going? I just didn't feel like I had anything out there that was exciting me. And man, this has done the trick. It's got me super excited.
That's amazing. Well, Terry, what I would love to do, I know you have your Instagram, I've looked at there, and I'm going to see if we can link to all the images that you referenced. So I'm hoping the cinnamon roll is there. You mentioned a couple of other ones. If not, if you can send them to me and I can pop them in the show notes so that people can have, you know, a visual reference for the images that we chatted about. I think that'd be really helpful. Beyond those specific images, if anybody wants to connect with you, anybody wants to find you, where should they go?
At Terry Studios. I'm most active on LinkedIn and Instagram. And there's terrystudios.ai is another Instagram channel that's specifically just for the AI work.
Amazing. And I always end the podcast with the following question. So I'm not sure. Again, I was just looking back at what we sent through. I hope I sent this through. But what is your most favorite thing to eat? What is your most favorite thing to capture with your camera? And what is your most favorite thing to share?
So my favorite thing to eat is chicken, anything chicken. I think, you know, it's quite interesting when people find out I'm a food photographer, they immediately think, you know, that I want to go to the 5-star restaurant in town or the new Thai place or whatever it is. And I'm a very picky eater. I'm a very meat and potatoes guy. You know, I'm not even a big fan of onions unless it's onion rings. So I wonder if that's my superpower as a food photographer, because, you know, if you really love onions, you really just don't have to do much to make them look appetizing. But for me, I really got to push it. I got to make this lighting really beautiful or something that makes me excited about the onion rings or the onions, whatever they are. So I think that maybe it's my secret power. Because I can, you know, my superpower that I can do this and, you know, find a way to make foods that aren't appetizing to me, appetizing to everyone else, including myself at that point, I guess. But yeah. And then favorite thing to shoot, you know, I love lighting has always been the thing I'm attracted to most about photography. Yeah. And capturing the light, creating the light. I do a ton of studio work. I don't do a lot of location work. So it's really about creating something from nothing. So lighting for me is really anything that's, you know, challenging. Maybe that's a stack of pancakes because, you know, that syrup and the reflection, oh my gosh, it's everywhere. And, you know, salads or things that I can get texture through and get transparency through the leaves and colorful stuff. So I like things that are a challenge for me to light. That's probably the thing that I love to shoot the most.
And I ask, just because I'm so curious, what is your go-to lighting? I'd love to know.
The product or the style?
The product, as in which light is the one that you love the most?
I use Broncolor lighting. And so I alternate between, you know, some of the silver reflectors they've got. I forget what they call them now, but it's a, you know, kind of an umbrella, that parabolic umbrella that will really focus the light. Yeah. I like that one a lot because it has texture and it has, you know, some wide breadth that'll cover the scene. And then I'll use a very specific, you know, hardcore light, just a specular light source a lot of times, maybe through a light diffusion or something like that, just to get those hard shadows and everything that's so stylish right now.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. Sorry, I took you off piste.
That's
all right. The last one was, what is your most favorite thing to share?
I think one of the things I've been talking about a lot lately is following your curiosity. I heard this and I wish I could attribute it to the person that said it, but I just realized that, like, that's it. Follow your curiosity and not necessarily your dreams, because I felt like, you know, when I was in my 20s, I participated in a seminar where we were asked to envision our future and, you know, what a dream job was like. And I envisioned this, you know, magical set with lots of props and lots of people. And I always wanted to work for big companies and, you know, a lot of pressure. And I've been very fortunate. I've gotten to achieve a lot of those things. And my dream really didn't morph as I, you know, achieve things, or, you know, as the milestones came in my life, I just still had that single dream. And when, you know, I reached a certain point, I felt like, what am I doing? You know, what's next? And so I think the idea of following your curiosity, and certainly for the generations that are coming up behind me, I think it's super important, because, you know, in my lifetime, I've seen a couple of big changes. Mm-hmm. I believe my son will see lots of big changes, you know, and remaining curious, remaining open to new ideas, and not saying, well, if I'm not a photographer, what will I do? Well, you know, there are a lot of other jobs that are going to come out of this new shift. And, you know, we have to be open to, what else am I curious about? What else do I want to learn? What else can I do? And not be beholden to this fixed dream that, you know, is not really updating with your life.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time, Terry. It's been a joy chatting with you.
Thank you.
As always, everything and anything mentioned in today's podcast episode can be found in the show notes, including links, of course, to Terry's social and his website. And I would really urge you to go and check him out. But also, if you love this podcast episode, please, please, please do reshare it on your Instagram stories and tag both me and Terry. I know it will be super nice for him to know that his words resonated and that you found them helpful. Also, you can find details about the workshop that I mentioned that is happening in London, and also the summit, the Food Photography Summit in Paris. You can find that in the show notes. Magic Mind, the Reels course, essentially everything that we talked about here. Thank you so much for tuning in. I really, really appreciate it, and I cannot wait to be back in about 2 weeks' time. See you then. Before I leave you, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I also wanted to let you know that this podcast was brought to you by my Eat, Capture, Share newsletter community, and I'd love for you to join. I will pop the details on how you can join my creative community in the show notes, so do go and check it out. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, it means so much if you can rate, review, and subscribe. All those things will help the podcast to grow and to reach the right audience. And yeah, you'd kind of make my day. All right, see you soon. Take care.